The supply chain has been a focus for cyber criminals the last year. The threats are at different levels of what you're doing with digital assets.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how pharma can reduce their cybersecurity risk. We're seeing more and more data breaches in healthcare. In fact, data breaches in healthcare reached an all-time high in 2021, impacting around 45 million people. And this was actually three times what it was in 2018. So whether the attack is ransomware, credential harvesting, or stealing devices, the healthcare industry is a prime target for attackers to monetize personal healthcare information and sell it on the dark web, or hold an entity ransom unable to deliver patient care. My guest today, Ariel Evans, co-founded RiskQ, which is a company that transforms your cyber risk into financial metrics and visualizes them in a dashboard presentation coupled with drill down capabilities. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Ariel.
Thank you for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to co-found RiskQ?
Sure, absolutely. So my background originally started off in nuclear physics, and I pivoted into information technology about 2 or 3 years out of college, realizing that I was going to be doing the same things over and over and over again. Yeah. And although that was a great field, information technology was evolving. It was on the cusp, and got involved in two software startups, which I spun and sold, one to BMC, the other to a Kleiner Perkins company, and then pivoted into looking at security from the governance and risk perspective, but then became even more interested from a cyber perspective coming out of Wall Street, and decided to move to Israel to see what was so special about the cyber nation and how cyber has evolved into this amazing industry. Became a chief information security officer at a small telecommunications company in the US before I actually made the move to Israel, and then started research on this particular area. I worked with many of the innovative companies there, but I noticed that no one was addressing cybersecurity from the business perspective. They were looking at vulnerabilities, they were looking at threats, they were looking at incidents, and no one could go back to the business and say, well, you have this much financial risk, you have, you know, you need to do this about it, you need this much budget to mitigate it. And everything was very not only subjective, but it didn't even exist. Then I started to do the research to interview the Fortune 1000 and the cyber insurance industry to write my first book about this, which is Managing Cyber Risk. And my second book came out at the beginning of 2022, which is Enterprise Cybersecurity in Digital Business. Nice. And so my passion is to look at how we can help companies to become cyber resilient using information that the decision makers can actually
help action
on it. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. You've got so much experience there. That's amazing. Congratulations on your second book coming out this year. Let's start with some of the basics for the listeners, because a lot of people confuse cyber threats and vulnerabilities and risk. Could you maybe elaborate on the difference between the cyber threat, vulnerability, and risk?
Absolutely. So what happened over time was organizations bought these layered tools like a vulnerability scanner. And what a vulnerability scanner does is it identifies weaknesses in systems. These are exploited by the cyber criminals. So if you have a weakness, cyber criminal comes in, they exploit it, then they get inside your network, and then they go and steal your data, and then they go and interrupt your business. That's where the financial damage happens. And of course, the regulatory implications of that as well. So the vulnerability is one aspect of a cybersecurity program. It's an important one, but it's one aspect. An incident is I've had a data breach, I've had a ransomware attack, and I'm responding to it, and I need a disaster recovery program or a business continuity program to address the step-by-step nature of what I'm responding to, who's helping in that response, and what are the expectations to resolve that particular issue. And threats are things that can be internal or external. They're bad actors who come in and disrupt the business internally if they're coming in as consultants. It can be an internal person who can pose a threat to you. And a threat is something that will actually produce some type of a cyber event. So they're very specific terminologies that get misused a lot, because what happens in the business is that they read something in the Wall Street Journal, or someone is telling them particular information, but it's not exactly right. What we see is that the cyber criminal attacks digital assets. And when they attack digital assets, what you can do is you can actually quantify the amount of financial exposure that you have related to those attacks that I just talked about, the data breach, which is data loss, the ransomware, which is a business unavailability, and the regulatory piece of it that you have. So the interesting part about what's been happening is that, because risk is the sexy word, everyone's saying risk, and it's like, no, it's not risk, it's a vulnerability. So when this cyber the CISO comes into the boardroom and gives you a list of 300 vulnerabilities and says, yeah, this is my cyber program. No, it's a list of 300 vulnerabilities. Oh, it's wow. Like, not your cyber program. Your cyber program is people, process, and tools that are reducing risk in alignment with the risk appetite of the organization.
Interesting. Wow. So it sounds like there's probably a lot of big companies getting it wrong right now, I'm imagining.
I would typically say yes. There are some companies who are getting it right, which is terrific. Yeah. See a real interest here in this subject. And the curiosity that people come in with is terrific, because once the mind is open, you can really give them a lot of very useful information that they can actually use in their day to day. And people are understanding that, you know, people are out there to sell product, and they're, you know, they're going to use the sexy buzzwords. I mean, look at advertising and other industries. So it happens, but they're curious to learn, and they're starting to understand that there are differences, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, cyber risk seems to be constantly evolving, and the hackers are just getting cleverer and cleverer. That it's just so much more sophisticated than it was, 5 years ago. And sometimes it feels like we're in this one-dimensional world anticipating three-dimensional risks. So how do you anticipate the risk that is, by its very nature, human and innovative?
It's a great question. And I think you have to start with, what is it in and of itself? Mm-hmm. Ask Marcus Aurelius, right? What is its nature? What does it do?
Yeah.
The cyber criminal attacks the digital asset. They steal data, right?
Yeah.
They interrupt business process, so you can't process revenue. And then they cause you all the regulatory fines and penalties, typically by it can exploit the vulnerabilities that are in your technologies. So everything is digital, and 85% of your business today is digital. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at keeping up with, it's not a question of keeping up with, it's a question of understanding, in my opinion. It's a question of getting clear that they are attacking these things. And in order for me to protect data, in order for me to protect business processes, in order for me to protect the technologies and systems, I have to understand them in their true context, right? Mm-hmm. And once I understand them that way, it changes the questions, and it changes the answers, because you're asking the right questions now, and you're being very specific and pinpointing where you have these issues, and then how can you lower those risks? And we're always going to have technology that is going to be way ahead of regulation. That is the standard. Yeah. We've never seen regulation catch. So regulation will not be the answer.
I get that. Yeah.
It's going to be more about educating and understanding the exact nature of what it is you're doing. And then putting those people, process, and tools in place to be able to understand things like that. Like a ransomware strategy is an example.
Yeah.
Where is the you know, the biggest issue today. It eclipsed the denial of service a few years ago with COVID. And so would you pay or restore, right? Well, you got to ask yourself some pretty important questions, like what's the cost to restore, right? Yeah. That's, I want to do a cost-benefit analysis.
Yeah.
Secondly, can I restore? What's my level of confidence? Have I done not only identifying this, where the data is and the source to target and the systems so I could restore all that and the technologies, but have I done the tabletops and have I done live fire, right? Have I done the real deal so that I know 100% that I can do that, right? Because if you can't, we have many examples of companies that they didn't want to pay the ransom, and I don't blame them, you know, and unfortunately what happened was they couldn't restore and they were publicly traded, and guess what? They were unsustainable within a month and they were bought for pennies on the dollar by the competitor. So you see that, see that, and it's like, it's really, it's real. So we need to be clear about what it is we're doing and how it is that we're protecting, and what's that, the business piece of that is, who's involved in that? Well, it's the advisors of the board. It's the CFO. It's the general counsel. Of course, it's the CISO. All have to have that conversation about, well, what does this look like, people? And how do we know that we're good to go or we aren't good to go? And that also then would lead me to advise them to get cyber insurance, because you can get ransomware sublimits for cyber insurance. So it's such an interesting field.
Yeah, I can see that. What do you think? So in the very beginning, I was talking about how it's tripled in the last 3 years in with healthcare data. What do you think is the biggest reason that healthcare data has become such a big risk to companies today?
Well, the whole upside for the cyber criminal is to commit fraud, and healthcare fraud is the number one fraud. If you look at, when we quantify risk, we look at something called the cost of a record. Healthcare has the highest cost of a record. It's over $400 a record USD, probably close to 500 euro. So for every record that you lose, the costs that are behind it are setting up a call center, doing the forensics, doing the legal, doing the remediation. I mean, all those costs are much higher in healthcare. Healthcare is also very digital. Healthcare is very innovative. So we see many, many levels of interconnectedness between the physicians and the hospitals and the HMOs and the pharmas. The entire ecosystem is interconnected, and they are sharing data with each other. And every time you do that, there's a point of, they call it ingress and egress. In other words, an opportunity for a bad cyber criminal to come in and say, I'm going to come in there and get this data. And the cost of, you can sell a lot of healthcare records and for a high price on dark web. So there's a lot going on with fraud, and it's very hard once fraud happens to do anything about it. It's like the costs are already, they're there, right? So you try and prevent the fraud from coming. So how do you prevent the fraud? In the case of healthcare, it is about, first of all, knowing where all your data is, right? Where is that data? Who are you sharing it with? How are you sharing it? How are you protecting it? And then looking at your entire people, process, and tools to understand where you need to tighten up things to prevent things from going wrong. But healthcare is a fascinating field, because look at what happened with COVID. I mean, when you see how innovative they got, like in once they were like, vaccines out. Israel was used as a petri dish, so that was kind of cool. I was one of the first to get a vaccine.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which I'm very grateful for, by the way. I think healthcare is, you know, at the bottom line, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. So you got it. You got to be mindful of your health. And our data in healthcare, we spend a lot of money innovating new drugs, new technologies, so that the healthcare industry can be more effective, can be more efficient, can reduce costs. And it's one of the most important industries in the world, frankly. And cyber criminals know that.
Yeah. Well, there was that case a few years ago where a cyber criminal got basically shut down one of the NHS hospitals or hospital trusts in the UK.
They did.
So, yeah, it's amazing. And it did take quite a while, like quite a few days before they could get back, you know, running operations and everything else again. Everything was lost, basically.
And, so, and there was Merck also, which was a collateral damage of what happened with NotPetya, where the Russians were trying to disrupt the Ukrainians with this pseudo-ransomware. It was really a worm. And that then propagated out to the entire supply chain, which hit Merck. And Merck ended up with having to borrow $240 million worth of Gardasil from the national stockpile, another $240 from the pediatric stockpile, over $1 billion. We're not talking small numbers in healthcare. We're talking gigantic numbers. $1 billion of loss that they're still feeling the pain from. You know, 40,000 people without access to computers, supply chain interruption. You know, it's a mess.
Yeah,
all digital.
It's amazing. And amazing, a company like Merck that do spend so much on their IT. I mean, I've been familiar with some of their IT projects. Let themselves get into that situation. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the pandemic, speaking of the pandemic, has actually forced pharma in general to become much more digital, as you said. And so that's going to increase the cyber risk dramatically for pharma because that's what's going on. Yeah. So are you seeing that they have realized? Are you seeing that pharma have actually realized that? And are you seeing more appetite for really getting into this space?
I think they have a sense. I think that there is still a big gap. I'm looking forward to helping pharma companies, actually, because they are near and dear to my heart. And I think that the need, because their digital footprint is so big, it's like they have to be the most proactive. They have to be, they cannot be reactive. If they are, what will happen is that they'll be suffering for it. And, you know, they have invested, you know, so much money in research and development and everything they do to create new medication that, and without medication, I mean, look, what if we didn't have penicillin, right? You know, diseases are going to evolve. We're going to have another COVID. I hope not, but we probably will. Some other type of COVID.
Some other,
You know, and we need them to be like right there for us. So
absolutely.
It's important that they are protecting that data and that they are guarding their own intellectual property as well.
It's interesting. So what do you think are the biggest risks faced by the healthcare industry today, including pharma?
Because they're so big.
Okay.
Because they have so much data. Because they're such a target, right? Like, so the cyber criminal's looking for the way to get in. The motive is obviously to disrupt, steal. And it can get geopolitical too. I was just on a panel the other day talking about geopolitical risk. And, you know, think about like what's going on in the world today and the diversity that we see. Or the division that we see, with, unfortunately, in Russia and in Europe. I mean, what better way to, cyber is the new fifth domain of warfare. It's, you can sabotage economies. You can, look what they're doing with the gas pipeline. The same thing can be done with the supply chain for the pharma company.
Sure.
You've got to understand the whole picture. And if you don't understand the whole picture, then you can't risk mitigate properly.
And a lot of pharma are dealing with very sensitive data because you've got clinical trial data, all that kind of data. Could you discuss some of the dangers that they could be facing by not looking at their risks sufficiently?
So CROs are a really important part of the pharma equation. You know, without the CRO, we can't get the drug to be approved and the safety and the efficacy of the drug cannot be obtained. They're part of our supply chain. They're one of the most important parts. So the supply chain has been a focus for cyber criminals the last year in different ways. We saw them using the supply chain as an example with SolarWinds, where the SolarWinds product is a network and security management product. But no one understood that what that was. And what they needed to do was they needed to say, well, how is that product being developed? What's the updates look like? Excuse me. Are we penetration testing a dev environment? Are we scanning our code? Are we vulnerability scanning? Are we teaching secure software development lifecycle to our developers, right? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that, I would tell you, is no, not based upon what happened with you guys. So the threats are at different levels of what you're doing with digital asset. Are mm-hmm. you using systems and technologies in your CRO that they could possibly infiltrate? And one of the horrible things that they could possibly do would they could possibly come in and actually change the data. Imagine that.
Like
you've got, you know,
that would be so deadly to so many people.
Devastating. Like this is a safety critical issue.
It's
like it can be life or death. And it's like, and if nefarious people are trying to do bad things to you, you know, that would be one thing that they could possibly do with the CRO. I wouldn't want that, but, you know, maybe the dosage of the drug would be underrated. I don't know, but there could be so many things.
I can see that.
You know, from a clinician perspective, it needs to be looked at. And I'm not a clinician, so I don't want to speculate. But the supply chain is one of the weakest links in cyber because you're so busy looking at your own stuff, hopefully, that you don't have enough time to pay attention to this supplier that is providing you with things. And it's like, but in our world, that supplier and you have to be on the same page in terms of how well you're protecting things. It can't be you're here and they're there. that's no good, right?
Yeah.
We've got to be looking at where we're not looking.
Got to be every 360 degrees, everything.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit about RiskQ and how you help companies like pharma assess their risk and guide them about what they need to do if it's at an unacceptable level?
Absolutely. So one of the first things we do is we identify where all your digital assets are with the digital asset inventory. So now you know where the data is, you know where the technologies are that are, you know, being used with that data, you know what business processes are being used. And you also know the ecosystem. You know, this is my world, this is my third party's world. That's the first important thing we do, because if you don't know that, you don't know what you're protecting.
Yeah.
You know, any store that doesn't do an inventory goes out of business, right? It's like, got to do an inventory. And everyone's like, oh, that's so hard. And it's like, no, it's not. It's just time consuming if you do it manually, which we don't.
Yeah.
But you need to have it. And the second thing we do is we quantify the different information into how the cyber criminal attacks. So data loss, usually from malware, right? How much do you have? Now, there's recommendations that we will make that you can lower that, right? So we'll tell you to archive records offline, or we will tell you to segment data out, or we will tell you put more control. I mean, we can tell you a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Ransomware is a strategy that we talked about earlier that's really important. You can't wait until you get the ransom. Please don't do that, people, please. We will be not helped by pretty much everybody because everyone is busy with other clients. So So ransomware strategy, knowing what that is. And then the regulatory piece is regulatory management. What's happening in companies that are really big, and pharma typically is a big, you know, area, is that they are doing things in silos. And so they're looking at credit card data and healthcare data and privacy data, but they're not looking at them in a unified manner, and they're not rationalizing the testing that they need to do in cybersecurity into one unified type. And when you do that, you can automate it. You can understand across the entire infrastructure where there's gaps and what those gaps mean from the financial perspective.
Yeah.
Right. And then you can say, oh, this one has the most financial exposure, so let me fix this one first. Right.
Yeah.
And then the next one, and then the next one. So the financial data is the strategic map.
Sure.
How you deal with all this stuff, right? Because it can be overwhelming. And what we do is we unoverwhelm you.
Very simply.
Yes, we unpack it so that you understand this is ransomware strategy. This is malware stuff. This is, vulnerability stuff. This is threat stuff. This is your compliance stuff. This is your regulatory stuff, because it's all interdependent of each other. Yes, it's an interdependent ecosystem. They're not separate, and everyone treats them separate. And then you're spending 10 times more than what you have. So the ROIs of using what we have, because it's automated and it's looking across that way, are ginormous for the company. Really ginormous. So you can save money just by starting to work with us, which is great. So there's many benefits.
And I do see this a lot in pharma, where pharma try and do things themselves rather than outsource in IT. And I know that that's going to lead to a lot of challenges, because people like you are experts in just this space, whereas the pharma IT departments are basically doing everything. So what kind of challenges do you think they're going to run into? And what kind of challenges did you run into initially that you've solved that would reduce their pain in this space?
That's a great question. So IT is technology, right? They are not risk experts.
Yeah.
They haven't been looking at cyber either sometimes. They're just looking at IT related initiatives, right?
Yeah.
Which is great. That's what they should be doing. Yeah. So they don't have the skills to do that, number one, typically. And number two, they're already working crazy hours. Like, now you're going to put something else on top of them. They're going to go like, no, right? So it's never going to happen, right? So it's like, so you see that a lot, an overwhelmed IT department with no cyber people or limited cyber people. And even the cyber people aren't risk people. They're like, I'm an operational person. I'm going to implement my SIM, which is my security incident event management system, and I'm going to get my SOC team, which is my security operations team, there, and I'm going to put encryption in place. That's what the CISO does, right? Yeah. Whereas the risk person is a very different skill set. They understand the technologies and what they do, and they understand all about cybersecurity, but they are not implementing, network scanning, as an example.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the other teams. So what we see when we come in is that they're dying to have us come in, first of all. Here, take it. And we're like, we're happy to take it. And they love to learn about this stuff. It's like they become curious because we're showing them stuff. They're like, what do you mean? And then we show them and they're like, and it's like, and it's not rocket science,
Nuclear physics.
No, it's actually
kind
math.
Of is.
It's math. It's really, it's math. It's like, it's math. It's science and math. But, my dad, when I wanted to go to fashion design school, he told me that there was absolutely no way I was going and that I had to go study science and math. So it's all his fault. You can blame him. But the gist of it is that there's a big relief when you walk in the door, because they know that they cannot manage this themselves.
Yeah.
And they know that it's going to get automated and it's going to get easier. And it makes the other big part of this is for the CISO to go back to the business and make the business case that, listen, if we do this stuff, we're going to reduce this amount of risk. Here's our return on investment, because we're financially looking at it. Here's our roadmap. Here's what we need to do. And all of a sudden the conversation is completely different.
Yeah.
And the same thing with like the automation of the vulnerability risk piece of it. If we're ingesting them from the vulnerability scanner, which we do, and we're showing them, okay, here's the priorities of fixing. Again, it goes back to the fact that the way they do that manually is to look at thousands of log files.
Yeah.
And those people burn out in 6 months.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They do. And so it's like you get rid of that piece of it, and then all of a sudden it's more consistent. It's more accurate. It's costing you less money to do it that way. And then you have all the data that you need to go back and start to negotiate with the risk owners and say, well, this is what we found. Do you want to accept this risk, or do you want to mitigate this risk? Because I'm just telling you information. I'm showing you what it means in financial terms. And you now have the onus to tell us what you want to do. Now that makes a very different conversation because now they're responsible. Yeah. And directors and officers are responsible to protect the business, which today is over 85% digital. Yeah. And the risk is cyber is the number one risk. It eclipsed M&A and environmental issues 3 years ago. So now it's a difference as you're saying to them, you know, what's your decision? And that is their decision.
Yeah.
It's not the CISO's decision. CISO's job or CRO, risk, cyber risk manager, whichever position they happen to be in, is to show them what you're talking about and then let them make decisions. And it's like, well, if it's your own directors and officers that are on the hot spot,
yeah,
it is, then the decisions may be different.
Yeah.
Which means more budget, more, I mean, if you look at JP Morgan Chase, they're a financial industry, they're not healthcare, but you know, over $1 billion a year. All the big banks are well over $1 billion a year now because they know one of the things that they don't know is when they should, you know, when they should stop spending money on things that are not effective, but we also help with that. So it's the same problem regardless of the industry that we find is that the business owners are the ones that need to be making the decisions. We need to give them the right data to make those decisions. And then you have a strategy that can be implemented tactically by your CISO or by your security team to reduce the risk. And healthcare is, you know, it's the favorite of the cyber criminals though.
Yeah. So it seems, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. So what are the typical ways companies use your platform? Do they use all the different components within it?
It depends on the first thing we do is a discovery session to see where the pain point is, because the pain points are vast and we want to focus in on what they're seeing. So as an example, if for some reason ransomware became the, you know, issue of the month, because in cyber it's the issue of the month. Right. It was Log4j in the beginning of the year. Then it before that it was ransomware, and before then it became the SolarWinds supply chain thing. All of those are issues, but you have to you have to listen to the customer, and you have to understand like where their board's at. That's a big one, and then advise, let's start with insurance. Let's start with third party. Let's start with risk quantification and vulnerabilities. Okay. Like you need to start somewhere. You don't do it all at once. And then what they do is once they've got something operationalized, which doesn't take long, it takes only a few months, is then they add on another layer of, oh, now I'm going to do insurance. Now I'm going to do third party, right? It's like the customer grows with the use cases of the platform so that they can start to look at this in many different ways. And what you also see is that the same people who own the vulnerabilities, which is the CISO, may not own the third party. And they're involved in the cyber insurance, but they're not the only person involved in cyber insurance. So it's about listening and understanding and then providing immediate value so that they can say, oh yeah, that worked. Let's do the next one. Because once that happens, no one rips and replaces it because it's something that you really truly need, but you never knew you needed it until you saw the data that came out of it. And then you're like,
oh dear.
Oh, wow. Like, I really need this. And it's like, yeah, you really do. And we've made it affordable for both the Colossus and the small medium enterprise, because it's like I said earlier about the supply chain. If I don't allow the supply chain to have the same level of what you have, they're your weakest link. So how am I helping you? I'm not. It's like, that's crazy. So it's based on how big they are. That's how we price it. It's like, if you're big, you pay more. If you're smaller, you pay less. It's like, but
there's more data and more bits to scan if you're big as well. So can you think of an example like that where you had a client and you went in and they suddenly realized how vulnerable and how much risk they were exposed to, and you were able to really turn that around? You don't have to give their name.
Pick a client, any client.
Yeah.
Okay. So most clients, if it's going up to the board level, ask me to present to the board. And the, as an example, one company that was doing about $4 billion a year, had three different regulations that they were in scope for. The general counsel didn't know that they were in scope for the healthcare one. That was a problem.
Yeah, that's a big problem, yeah.
I was at a skirt around that one in the board meeting. But they had $3.8 billion worth of exposure because they had so many records in their systems. I mean, we're talking tens of millions, almost 100 million in some cases. And every person has to be notified. That cost is ginormous. It's like these things are something they don't understand. They had the security incident event management system is something that sits on your network and looks at your network traffic to find things that are abnormal.
Yeah,
it's a standard in cybersecurity, but they had seven different regions and only two of them had it.
Oh, wow.
So they were flying blind
in five,
not able to see a large scale attack against the organization because only two sevenths of their organization had the capability. Even it's like these things are not, because one of the biggest challenges you see sometimes is when they're the way that they orchestrate the different roles and the different ways that the business works. A lot of businesses grow by acquisition, and then there's a layer here and a layer, but these people are operating independently of you and you and you, and no one's talking to each other, and they don't want to talk to each other. That's politically not so fun, but it happens. And what you're trying to say is, listen, you all have the same stock price, my friends. It's like, so the quibbling that you want to do, you know, senior management should unquibble them. But the gist of it is that you need to work together here because you're sharing these digital assets across the infrastructure in a lot of cases. You're sharing the cyber tools across it. You're sharing the cyber resources across it. So you need to, in my opinion, really look at this from an enterprise level. This is an enterprise risk. It's the number one business risk. Stop horsing around and get real and you know, look at it that way. But you see, you know, companies don't know what they don't know. And but the good news is once you open up their eyes and you say, hey, look at this, you've got, you know, $4 billion worth of this because you could easily fix this. A lot of it's fixable.
Yeah.
And then you've got this over here and this over here. And then you don't fix it all at once, but you prioritize it and you fix it so that, you know, there's a method to a madness. There's a strategy that works. There's KPIs that are understandable and reportable back to people that say, okay, we reduced, you know, 20% of our financial exposure in the first 3 months, and we tightened up all our controls. So we have like 20% more effective controls and blah, 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 blah. And it's like all of a sudden everyone understands that language.
Yeah.
Right? It's
like,
so you get, you know, in the beginning they're scared, but then once they understand it, they're fine. It's like they welcome that information.
What do you think are the most common mistakes that large companies make with risk assessment?
Looking at vulnerabilities and saying it's a risk. We talked about that right in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's huge. Not understanding that what is mislabeled and also by standard bodies and by different nation states and states as a risk assessment is not a risk assessment.
Sure.
It is a control assessment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a set of tests of controls that you test to make sure that things are in place to protect the asset. It's not a risk assessment. Risk is impact and likelihood. Impact is how much am I going to lose financially? And likelihood is how probable am I? What percentage based upon how I'm protecting it do I have? And then I understand those two relationships and I can use those correctly. But I still think that because, you know, risk is a sexy word and everybody wants to be selling product that they're like, oh, it's risk. And it's like, no, guys, it's vulnerabilities. Please don't do that. You're doing a disservice to everyone out there that you're trying to help by misleading them because you want to, you know,
sell
we all want product. Listen, we all do, but if
the right thing.
say, say, I'm detecting weaknesses in your systems that cyber criminals will exploit, and I'm helping you to fix them so that they are not exploited. Thank you very much. End of day. That's what you are. It's like, you're not risk. Okay. But yeah, that's definitely a challenge.
Yeah. And so how long does it take from when someone, say a large pharma came to you, how long would it take from when they first come to you delivering the risk dashboard?
Okay. So depending on what the pain point is, if it's insurance, it's within a week. Okay. If it's third-party risk management, a large pharma is going to have thousands. If you look at the Department of Defense, they have 12,000 tier one providers and about 200,000 tier two providers. Big pharma is going to be not as big as that, but they're going to be big. So, so the question would be to immediately give them value within a 3-month window to identify who are the key suppliers and what does that financially look like for you and where are you with their assessments. The beautiful thing about third party is you're giving access to the third party to provide their evidence. And this is another thing I didn't speak about, which I wish I had done earlier, but I will now. What we saw over the past several years was these third party things that were giving them 300 questions and saying, okay, fill all these out. It's like, but no evidence to say if the control was in place or not. It's like, so everybody's like, check. I'm like, what are you, crazy? You're not verifying any of this. So the verification process has now become like the biggest hot issue. And actually on the insurance side, we're doing something very special with the insurance industry on that, which is huge. But for the organization, with the third party, you should be doing an independent audit or hiring a third party to come in, like we do that for the companies too, and look at those controls and say, well, this pen test is 3 years old.
Yeah.
It's not sufficient. Yeah. Or, you know, we asked you for an entitlement report and you gave us something else, because nobody knows what these things are. What's an entitlement report, right?
Yeah.
Like, they know what it is. Most of them don't. And they hire, like, you know, some people to come in and say, okay, do all this stuff. And and even the IT people, if they don't know what identity access management is, which they may or may not, won't know what that is. So again, it's like, you know, we have to verify that the information is correct. So you give access to the vendors to provide the information and then you check it.
Yeah.
And it's like, and so you can have that up and running within 3 months.
That's good to know.
And then you just keep on expanding it. But you have the foundation in place. And then as far as risk quantification goes, what we would recommend is that they go with, like, every organization, depending on what industry they're in, 80% of their systems are relatively somewhat the same. You have HR, you have payroll, you have financial system, but what makes you different from everybody else is your core business system, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're an insurance company, your policies, claims, and underwriting, right? You're a pharma, it's your CRO, it's your intellectual property and your clinical development, and it's your supply chain, right? It's like everybody's different in terms of those pieces.
Yeah.
But because our people are coming from business as well, they're not just coming from cyber, they're coming from business.
Yeah.
They know how businesses operate. And they know what questions to ask to tease out the information about, well, you know, we look at we look at everything before we even go in. We do like a week's worth of analysis publicly.
Yeah.
We can find out what digital assets you have.
Yeah.
We won't tell you how we do that. We can, you know, if you have public information, if you're making annual filings and quarterly filings, we're going to read those.
Yeah.
We're going to research you about breaches and press. We're going to find out everything about you before we walk in the room. And then we're going to say, well, because a lot of times our perspective is so different than anyone else.
Yeah.
Like,
the lens you're looking through. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, people can be up and running in 3 months, generally speaking. If it's insurance, it's even quicker. It really depends on what they want to do, right?
Interesting. Well, thank you so much. I think that there's a lot of food for thought for pharma companies in this space. And certainly from what I've seen and the cautionary tale from what happened to Merck, I think there's a lot to be said for this. So if any of the listeners want more information on RiskQ, head over to their website, which is risk-q.com, and you can see some of the information there, or you could reach out to Ariel and her team. Thank you so much for being on the show today, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.